All of us are familiar with gold. From the ancient pharaohs to the Queen of England to the twinkling smiles of Quamash. It is yellow and it is shiny, and it is not only just a symbol of status, but it is the universal trademark of wealth, and it is also the oldest currency known to man. And our general understanding of the origins of gold is that it comes from ore deposits found in some countries, of which South Africa is actually one of the biggest suppliers. But this is not entirely true. Gold does not originally come from deep inside the earth. In fact, gold doesn't even come from this planet. Gold is formed through what is known as a kilanova. Yeah, I know, it sounds like a name of a SoundCloud rapper. But a kilanova is an astronomical event that occurs when two neutron stars collide with each other. Now, a neutron star is so dense that a piece of it the size of a grain of sugar would actually weigh several tons. Now, when these two stars collide, the resulting explosion gives off a cloud of dust that is made up of, amongst other heavy elements, gold. This gold dust then travels across the cosmos, and in our case, it got trapped between the masses of rock that were being drawn together by gravity, thereby forming this little place that we call home. For me, gold symbolizes two things. One, gold is like a clue, evidence of a history behind the history of our world. To hold a piece of gold in your hand is to hold the truth of the vastness of existence. It tells you that so much more has happened before we even arrived in this universe. In fact, if the universe was 24 hours old, human beings would only have been around for less than 20 seconds. On the other hand, gold says so much about who we are and how we relate to the earth. And more specifically, it says a lot about how we create value systems, which in turn determine what we believe is important and what is not. For one thing, for most people, the value of gold has really nothing to do with its intergalactic history. For most people, they couldn't care less about the fact that gold is basically the ashes of a dead star that lived for billions of years before the Earth was even formed. But throughout history, the story of gold has been interwoven into the tapestries of royalty and the wealthy. And this narrative was premised on the scarcity of gold and the difficulty of mining it. But in many, many ways, this narrative has been used to reinforce it as a status symbol, and thereby, and most importantly, maintaining its ever-increasing price. So, where am I going with this? Well, I've always been curious about how land relates to spirituality. What does the earth represent in how we engage with the divine? If we could create this whole narrative around gold, something that is found in the earth, and for it to define our societies for so many years, how is it that we relate to the earth in general in terms of our spirituality as a people? As Africans, it is almost a given that land is an integral part of our spiritual identity, but I want to know how. And I want to look specifically at sacred sites and how they correlate to the cosmology of our beliefs. To try to get more insight on this, I spoke to Gogothato Tukudu. She's not only vastly knowledgeable about the sacredness of the land in our country in terms of how it relates to our spirituality, but As operations manager at South African National Parks, it's quite literally her job to know and to look after some of our most important sacred sites in the country.
There's proof that there were people here before history started being recorded, you know, and that history comes through in certain sites that were found, which predate what history says or where historians say our history began, you know. So then I wanted to look into that, about how then land and spirituality engage, you know what I mean? Where does land and spirituality meet, and what does that meeting place actually mean? You know, how do those two elements impact each other and mold each other, right? So the first thing I want to know from you is, what is a sacred site?
Okay. So a sacred site is something, a place, a space that has spiritual or cosmological significance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I mean by that is that the spaces that allow us to express our spiritual consciousness, botho, ba rona, ne? So it's ditsosolosa botho, diaga botho, they give you the opportunity to understand whether your spiritual self-identity is an identity of servitude. How do you then become your true spirit self, and how do you express that? And for me, spiritual consciousness is a botho. So those spaces are spaces that are designed by the divine to allow us to connect to botho ba rona, mm-hmm. and then find an expression for botho ba rona, mm-hmm. a connection to our spiritual consciousness, botho ba rona, and how we express it, mm-hmm. ne? And also how do we identify with it, and all of that. So you'll find for these places are probably those places where either we do very significant rituals. It could either be the cyclic rituals that are linked to the cycles, whether it's lunar cycles or solar cycles, you know, where it could even be an equinox ritual that we do. It could be a rainmaking ritual that we do. Or it could be a place where significantly dingaka le dikgoshi were then going through a rite of passage or some form of initiations. Some of them are cosmic markers, botswana le mizalo yelang. You know, it's a very significant cosmic marker, because then it's the bridge between the actual physical land and the cosmic. And then it's that little bridge that comes in betwixt, you know? So it's that, and then you've got these natural spaces. The natural spaces are the spaces then that the nature spirits then reside or preside over. Those natural spaces also, it's about the energy that space presents. Sometimes it's like, there's a certain energy that it presents. Yes. And all those energies are useful, you know? They're not just energies in jail that are just hanging around, you know? But those energies have some sort of use, you know? Sometimes you'll get to a space and there's a very strong fire energy, you know, about preparation for battle. So like, but specifically to channel the energy of bravery and power, you know. There's certain places where oyako nokeng engwe yana ga batla gore o tlhapisiwe o lukisetswe a specific point in your life that is significant that you need to ready yourself for. So natural spaces is then sacred markers in terms of the natural landscapes. Thaba, ditlhare, noka, pororo. So examples of that could be then, as a cosmic marker, like I said, inzalo ya langa is a perfect example. As a place eleng gore ne go diriwa di initiation, a place tsa o tshwana le ko mapungu, where there's certain areas there that there was an initiation, rites of passages that were held. Ko rirang dikoma ko teng, it's not by mistake, it's by design that there's a specific thaba or pleke e leng gore ge batho ba ya lebollong or ba ya ko koming, they go there. It means there's an energy that allows for that process to actually happen. Mm-hmm. And then you've got then other places like Botate Forest or Lake Funduzi, you know, it's a grand lake. There's and link even to the mythological aspect of our cosmology there, you know. So for me, sacred sites are memorials of wisdom. They are spaces that then reconnects parts of what we've lost with what we are yet to find. And so that's how I then see and I define what sacred sites are. And then there's a last one where it's about cultural and heritage significance or importance. Mm-hmm. Ne? Because somewhere there were people that lived there. So archaeological ruins, an ancient civilization that's found, a monument that's found, or a temple that exists that's found or that's been there that people around there know of, you know. So again, Mapungubwe is the greatest example. There was an entire ancient civilization of people that lived there over 1,000 years ago that was a powerful kingdom that was able to then connect to other nations from other places, from Asia, China, India, all over, Arabia, that would come to Mapungubwe because there was this beautiful civilization that existed. Dzata also is another example.
What does that say actually about our history to say that the people who lived in Mapungubwe had connected with people from other places? Because we don't, that's not a history that we are aware of, you know. What does it say about the, you know, our history that we don't know that Africans in Southern Africa had connected with people from other continents before white people came?
Mm. The interesting thing about our history, and I think we'll probably talk about that later, is that it's very much designed or linked to the spiritual disposition of our land that was intended. Ne? Because I get it, these things are landmarks of our history, landmarks of our identity, these spaces. Mm-hmm. There was a deliberate and intentional, deliberate way to spiritually dispossess us from our lands as part of this colonization agenda, but even prior to that. So as a consequence, if we don't have access to understanding those spaces because we've been disposed from that, then parts of our history is lost until someone tatemogolo kae kae are he wetse go khotile go nna dikgoshi ka mogoko kwa ka mpuditseng tsene di nna ko ko thabeng ele, you know, khale khale, you know. And so the fact that generally we don't know about Mapungubwe shows the intelligence in how the this whole agenda of colonization was so deliberate. So then that's how then we've lost parts of our stories, you know. And for me, that's why those sacred sites and us engaging with those sacred sites is so important, because it refers to clues about who we are. Sometimes there's a full-on story that we discover when we engage with a sacred site that then bridges the gap of the fact that for generations we didn't know that a place like Mapungubwe existed.
So I want to go back a bit, because you mentioned heritage sites that were sites where something from an older world was found. Does that make it a sacred site?
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why? Because I suppose we need to start to understand, you know, if we're talking and wanting to understand, is there a difference between a natural space,
yes,
sacred site,
mm-hmm,
and what would be a man-made sacred site? Mm-hmm. I think we need to start with understanding how humans interact with nature and how human beings have been designed to interact with nature. Maybe Rotome Mo, you know, because I think it's important to then see that there actually isn't any difference, right? So the creator creates the universe for nature and its residents to coexist in harmony. So it means Runa, by design, by spiritual design, we're supposed to then coexist in harmony with nature. So for us, nature is the umbilical cord to the creator, to the source, to the divine. When we're cut off from it, it's like harina, a root or a connector to everything that we are. And that's why in the olden days, we used to treat nature with such love, care, and tenderness. You can just even see how we wouldn't hunt Njen willy-nilly. Hunting was for a specific reason, you know, for a specific event. When we cultivate or we harvest, we do that sustainably. Africans are probably the first conservationists. This whole notion of environmental friendliness, how to look after your environment, it starts with us because we were consciously aware of the fact that everything in nature is spirit. A little bug in the moya, setare in the moya, muo wapela, you know, and that's how we treated it with such reverence. And the fact that nature then becomes the foundation of the elements that we use within our lives in many ways, you know, and understanding what those four elements mean to us as batho. Raitse gore mmu, earth, anchors, it gives birth to life. We know gore metsi, cleanse, facilitates the flow of spirit. We know gore moya, purifies, gives a sense of clarity. We know gore fire ignites passion and ignites whatever that has been lying dormant within us, it ignites that. And we know that fire can also consume negative energy. So that kind of understanding then made it impossible for us to not have a harmonious relationship with nature. And because we understood that, we understood that those sacred spaces getting all of those elements in terms of its importance. So I think Runa, when we moved around, we geolocated ourselves spiritually with sacred sites. Tsedi natural tseo, because we understood its importance for us. So when we went Ranamela Tabara Kriya, K2, we settled. Then we moved from K2 Rayako, Mapungubwe Hill, and we settled there. We understood that around there, around there, there is the temple of the sun where certain things happened that is important for us and our spiritual health. So those so-called man-made monuments of a previous existence in ancient times, almost always, I promise you, it's probably linked to some natural sacred site and what that natural sacred site signifies for those people.
What happened to this knowledge?
Sure, cool.
because what sacred sites also represent, they represent, they're like an archive.
Mm.
They're like a library.
Mm.
They represent a certain body of knowledge that people had, right? Because there are all sorts of reasons for why this was there, why this was there.
Mm.
But we don't know that.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
There are rocks in between Senegal and Gambia.
Mm.
Which is like a constellation of columns of rocks.
Mm.
And if you read about it from a Western history point of view, you know, they don't know.
Mm.
You know, they don't know who made it.
Mm.
They just appeared. And usually when Western history doesn't understand something, especially when it's all related to them, they just leave it alone.
Mm.
You know, sacred sites also mean, for me, or what I've learned through my research is that it seems as though civilization, or more specifically, enlightenment or knowledge comes in waves. Yeah. People build up a certain body of knowledge up to a certain point, and for one reason or another, though, that people, that nation, that civilization then collapses.
Mm.
And when it collapses, there seem to be some kind of regression that happens.
Mm.
It seems like the people who come after that
are
sort of lower down in their understanding.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because my thing is, we should have known why Inzali Elanga is built the way it is.
Mm.
You know, we might not necessarily have done it ourselves or being directly connected to those people, but this knowledge should be around. Why is it that we don't have this knowledge about how sacred sites function, and we don't have stories like family stories? You know, no one's family can tell you about this and this particular place in relation to them,
mm.
you know. So what is it that happens? What happens to this knowledge? Why does it just keep disappearing?
It's displacement a lot of the times. Sometimes the displacement is deliberate, but and then sometimes the displacement is induced. Ne?
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes, and that displacement is very much always linked to loss of sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
And start to concentrate on things that do not build who we are as Batho.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So if we now start to concentrate on greed and power and overpowering one over the other, that already creates a spiritual displacement. And then when we want to conquer others who are living in a space that is connected to them sacredly, the sanctity of it, when we're now trying to conquer and overpower, there's also then that spiritual displacement,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so so sometimes those kind of things are deliberate. So because, you know, earlier on when we were outside, I was saying, and I think it's linked to this, the question that you're asking, okay, fine, what happens to the knowledge? Because a lot of the times we ask ourselves, 100,000 years ago, there were people who were very spiritually intelligent
yes.
to be able to understand that there are specific rocks that can create sound frequencies that can travel very far and wide to communicate to other portals everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's how they sent messages, you know? And also, those rocks can then create their own kinetic energy so that we can then reuse the kind of energy that we're putting forth in those rocks. And on top of that, those rocks are then linked to some sort of cosmic placement, you know? The equinoxes, the solstices, the cardinal points, Sirius, Orion's belt, they knew that 100,000 years ago. That's how spiritually intelligent they are.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in the space between that 100,000 years ago and then the evidence of the Great Pyramids of Giza, which was like only 5,000 years ago, you know, just in terms of Africa, in between, yes, there's some sacred sites that were built that has the same type of significance.
Yeah.
But it's a representation of that there were people that were so spiritually intelligent that they did that.
Yeah.
Those rocks are not even indigenous to that space. The closest type of dolomite that we have there is 67 kilometers away. They weigh five tons. How did they get there? What kind of people, human beings, lived there? And so what you're asking is, what happened in the case Yayonenzal? What happened between then 100,000 or 75,000 years ago and then 5,000 years ago? What happened to that knowledge, that gap, you know? And I think it's got a lot to do with rona refeletse re tebala for what is our actual purpose. E be re lebella dilo tse leng gore ga di tsamaisane le botho ba rona. And then it created a deliberate action of now people conquering the other. So what I was saying about land is that I feel like a lot of the nations or the tribes or the clans have a connection to a specific sacred site
mm-hmm.
because of their sole purpose, that nation, that tribe, that land, that clan, etc. So I feel like they have a calling or a purpose. They had that to be the custodians of that land.
Mm-hmm.
Ne? So I feel that sometimes the movements and the migrations wasn't just about conquer or finding place to move away from either a natural disaster or finding a place to run away, or then there was a broken, a breakaway of kingship or whatever mm-hmm. it is, and then others moved on. I think it almost feels as if spirit was calling the custodians of those sacred spaces to come and take their place
mm-hmm.
because they are the ones that need to look after those places, because they're the ones better able to do it because of their sole purpose. Each lineage, I think, has a sole purpose.
Are you saying that different groups, I don't even want to say tribes, but I'll say different groups of people
yes.
have been given different spiritual mandates?
Yeah. To be the custodians of those sacred spaces.
And being a custodian of that sacred space, that space functions in a certain way
mm.
and but therefore then you are a custodian of that function yes, as well
exactly so rena le balobedu gone yanong balobedu banna in the area ya go Gamotjatji. That area itsiwe ke as a place of rainmaking. We've got the chief custodianship of the rainmakers, which is then Khoshigadi wa Gamotjatji. Their sole purpose is the ones to be able to understand that function, that I'm able to induce rain in order for there to be fertility mo lefatsheng gore dilo di gole. That is their lineage sole purpose, or that group in particular. That's why it makes sense for them to be the ones who are the custodians of that place and not any other group. So I think every sacred site has a function, and every custodian has a responsibility to protect and preserve that function. So over time, what has happened is that then we migrate and we stay in a place that is linked to that function that we have. Then another group comes. It assimilates us through conquer at that place. And then they then take the custodianship, but they don't have that in their spiritual DNA. So then what happens? Then there's cosmic disorder, because those people are not the ones who are supposed to hold the custodianship of that sacred place, you know? But because I understand the power and I want it, I'm going to come there and conquer you and assimilate so that I can then take that sacred code and want to make it mine. But it's not mine. You're taking a circle and trying to put it in a triangle, you know? What is going to happen? There's going to be misalignment. And then what is going to happen? Over time, generations, I then can't transfer that knowledge because it's not mine anymore. I took it from somebody else, you know? I took it from somebody else. You know, if you notice the groupings, that have successfully able to hold true to their culture, their customs, their cosmology. Let's take the Venda for an example. For the most part, they are still very true to their rituals, their customs and whatever, because you would find that within that group, they were still able to be the custodianship of their indigenous knowledge through their sacred spaces. Even maybe if there were a few battles here and there, they were still able to hold that space, you know? So as a consequence, that's how then the knowledge get lost from then generation to generation to generation to generation. Because then sometimes in those instances, the true custodians are not the ones who are there, because of what is happening.
What you're saying is actually very... It's intense, because it reiterates something that Mkuluma Kanya said on the previous episode, that in a way we all have different spiritual roots, we have different spiritual origins, and therefore then our spiritual functioning on the earth will not be the same, you know. And it concerns me in the sense that it seems we are the individuality of the spiritual purpose is being lost in that. It seems like spirituality is all one thing and we all function the same way. Because I've never heard someone saying that, you know, some people are only rain people in the sense as a people. I understand that there are people who are gifted or an individual who's gifted in a particular way. But I didn't know that the gift can be given to a particular people as a group. And because it makes me think now, if a person were to have a calling, right, and they come from a certain people, but they can't connect their spiritual gift to those people, as in they don't know that that's where their gift comes from, a group of people who were given a specific spiritual purpose. And what am I, Olotwasa, and that part of you is totally ignored, you know. Because I'm wondering, is that why some people have such difficult time going through
you know, becoming healers, because that particular component, that you're not supposed to be going through this particular thing. You're supposed to be going through that because your gift comes from this kind of people. Is that a contributing factor?
I think it is. I think it really is, because it's to do with that spiritual displacement that I was talking about, that then links to identity and purpose, you know, on a global scale within yourself. Because obviously you have your own individual gifts that needs to be nurtured. And most of the time, then those customs and the ceremonies that initiation brings will give that foundation. But there's certain nuances that are individualized to a person. To you in relation to the collective. So if you've lost the knowledge of understanding rona batho ba rona ke batho ba ntwa ge go shubile re bitsa bo khokho bao e le gore ke bone ba raetelang pele, because that is part of their function. Wa bona re itse gore go na le batho ba e leng gore their function is to be the knowledge keepers, the archivers, the recorders of information. If they don't even understand that that is part of their purpose, that then you're missing a big chunk of your own spiritual identity. You see? And so it's also then, that's why these kind of spaces are important. Because you remember earlier on I was saying, hore, it reconnects what we have lost with what we are yet to find. Ne? We've lost our identity. If we engage with a spirit, a sacred site, and understand its function, then it will make it easier for us to connect to what we, our future selves, what we are yet to find, because then they are a bridge, you know?
Okay. It this is really, I feel like this is so important, because it's making clear the how our individual gifts as a people, as human beings, then manifest, you know, because it's rare to hear a person saying, I've been called to a specific field, you know. Even people who have gone through Golfetlong and are healers, that it's very rare to hear of specializations, especially ones that don't have to do necessarily with physically healing people. Like, for example, like people who are called to archive, you know, people who are called to rebuild society, as in like, is the person called to be a politician? You know what I mean? Like someone who is called to build society as a functional system, not just heal individuals.
Yes. So you'll find hore go na le batho ba leng gore ke batho ba leng gore they are the custodians of the rituals of the royal family. And it's been like that forever and ever. You know? But somewhere we've lost that. Mabon. Hore maybe wena is about with whatever, whoever is our leader. Whether it's a politician, it's a khoshi or khosana, or even leadership in our own little spaces, you are going to be then the hype man. But you actually have the most influence, you know, as the hype man. But it's also then trying to understand, okay, if I understand just that one purpose, everything else plugs into it so much more easier. Because why? The umbilical cord is standing, you know? The anchoring is standing, you know? So I just think that, and you know what is interesting is that the clues are always there in the songs that we sing, you know, as just even the cultural songs, never mind the Dipina tsa Mangoma. And if you look at even who we are named, you know, wena omanzini, umthunzi, unomalang, interestingly, they linked to the four elements as well. You know, horo dabula manzi wa itu hore, it's someone that's linked to the energy of water primarily. It's not to say you are not connected to the other four elements, but your anchor is water. Wabon, hor omukweneng, totem ya gago ke kwena, omukwena. You know hor your element, what you need to connect to is water. So it's the same thing with spiritual functions as well. That's how I see it. You know, the fact that within our sense of identity, there's all these clues that tell us about the essence of who we are as a people within the collective of the function of the grouping. So once we've got that, for me, it's what gives us then the anchor to then incorporate all these other beautiful gifts that we're given that are unique to who we are.
So
Now is, I want to bring it to more current times. Now, what makes a home an ancestral home?
So if we talk about our current times, I think we also need to understand the fact that we live in a very mechanical state of being.
Mm-hmm.
I get, and nature is cyclic, is not mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
So already there's a displacement there, there's a disconnect there.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we need to do, and we spoke about the relationship that we have with nature.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably the relationship that our ancestors have with nature. For me, an ancestral home, ne? So what you're asking is that this building, how do you make it an ancestral home?
Yes, because our understanding is that I need to do umsebenzi. And if ngifuna ukwenza umsebenzi, I have to go to my grandmother's house.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's my ancestral home. I must go to my grandfather's house.
Mm.
That's my ancestral home.
Mm.
I'm trying to understand what makes it, because we live in urban areas.
Mm.
We live in suburbs,
mm.
you know. If my daughter is born in the suburbs and she grows up in the suburbs, she gets married, you know, she has kids, she has grandkids.
Mm.
Her grandkids are going to say that house in wherever in the suburbs is their ancestral home, because we have a perception that an ancestral home either has to be in the rural areas or it has to be qualification in. So this is why I'm trying to understand what makes a home an ancestral home.
Is if you anchor the energy of that function within your home, the root of it being ya koko ya koko ya ntatemogolo ya whoever, ne? Is when you bring that energy, whether it's through a ritual, a ceremony, a simple thing, is what's your wakoko kunadula koting, utlisa hai. Through whatever you're guided to do, you are now creating a home for your spirits, your ancestral spirits, to be able to reside. Ne? Shaponale headquarters in the rurals there, but it doesn't mean that you can bring headquarters to you. And then create that space that you felt. Here. And that's why then we'll have certain ceremonies that we will do. And we're actually saying, Rikisa Moya, yeah, the spiritual function of who we are as a lineage, as a clan, Rona. Rikisa Hai. So that we can be grounded. At least then that's the foundation. Because then the energy of that function is rooted in the space that we reside in all the time.
So then I live in a flat, you know, somewhere in Pretoria. I live in a flat somewhere. I live in an apartment and whatever. I think our peers are generally conflicted as to, is this home a spiritual home? And how do I spiritualize my flat? You know, how do I spiritualize my flat? How do I turn it into a spiritual home with my 1 year lease on it?
Yes. So, and it's not too complicated, you know. Someone was asking me, okay, you're saying that we live a mechanical state of being. Our offices have artificial light, artificial air, you know, we're stuck in cars all the time and all of that. How do we bring just the energy of whatever, of nature in? It's a simple thing as kubula the window. It's a simple thing as So to create, to spiritualize or to create a space where you feel like spirit resides, it's as simple thing as going to a space that you feel deeply connected to out there in nature. Even loko nkunya ko kok alunya na engwe ne hola mo khoneng wayepula. If how nimo fleteng wona in a house like this, if unna go fleteng, it's a simple thing as noka eleng gaufi le kokoko ga gwanna go teng, it's a metsi a teng, we tikirele your own little altar nyana. And then create a space that you can connect to those people, because physically you can't, but spiritually you can. By just having those kind of tools that represent a symbolism of you connecting to your roots and your function.
You know, when you say take the earth from your grandmother's house, or take that plant from your grandmother's house and take it with you to wherever it is that you will be living. I get the sense that a lot of what makes a place spiritual has more to do with you and your mind more than it has to do with the actual physical or rather spiritual quality of that place. And this is where I think sometimes I get conflicted
mm-hmm.
about sacred spaces mm-hmm. and sacred places
mm.
in that, is this place spiritual because I think it is?
Mm.
Is it you know, spiritual because it is spiritual?
Mm.
For example, what makes a cave in Clarence mm. more spiritual than a cave somewhere in Krugersdorp?
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, I'm trying to understand. I almost want to say that I don't want to fool myself into mm. believing that a space is spiritual when it's actually not.
Mm.
But at the same time, I can't discount the spirituality that exists all mm. around. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So I have that debate mm. with myself. It's like,
mm.
is this place spiritual because it is spiritual?
Mm.
Like, is it, it's not part of my perception.
Mm.
And I'll give you an example with churches, right?
Mm.
A church is a sacred space
mm.
for no other reason but because the people there decided that it is.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I'm not a Christian, and a church is not for me a spiritual place
mm.
per se.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's spiritual in that I recognize what it is that they're doing there.
Mm.
For example, you know, and likewise, a person who does not practice African spirituality won't necessarily recognize the places that I believe mm. are sacred. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, mountains are sacred for
mm.
me. You know, mist is a very sacred element
mm.
to me.
Mm.
Rivers are very sacred,
mm.
you know, but to another person, they're not.
Mm.
So does that make it less spiritual if
mm.
you don't have the perception of it being
mm.
spiritual?
Everything is about resonance.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're explaining is resonance.
Okay.
And I get related to other functions
mm-hmm.
that every function has a place in spiritual consciousness
mm-hmm.
in Butubaru.
Yes.
There's no one just because wena hey kuena onolo dese o tswara dikgosi. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
mean you are any more important than motho o leng gore o disha dikgomo tsa motse.
Yes.
You're not any more anything.
Yes.
Than that person. You have a function. So these places we spoke a lot about function have a spiritual function. How you see the spirituality or whatever of it is because of resonance. So Motouleng ko Clarence le Madimatle ko Thabazimbi has a spirit, both of them have a spiritual function to someone who has resonance with it. It doesn't
okay.
mean you are now discounting its spiritual destiness, you know? You know, just because you're not resonating with it. And that's why it was so lovely that we actually started to talk about spiritual functions of these sites.
Yeah.
Because then there will be a resonance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The spaces that I don't feel any resonance to, you know, that are supposed to be sacred.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because asintwaga is not part of then, you know, my spiritual function within the collective I come from.
Okay. So then, that's very critical what you're saying. So does that mean that not everyone who's taken Konokeng to be cleansed will actually be cleansed if Muto doesn't resonate with the river?
With the river as a body of water?
As a body of water.
Okay. So earlier on, I get Rebuletika, the natural spaces
mm-hmm.
and that the fact that they have a function on themselves.
Yes.
So then you've got the natural space, so you've got the area that also has a function.
Mm-hmm.
Ne? And then now what we're delving into is the alchemy of nature. Ne?
Okay, as in the alchemy coming from a person?
No, from noka eu.
Okay.
Metsi ao.
Okay.
You know? A rule of thumb for Rona as Bato Bamoya is that there needs to be a spiritual resonance with a space. It's like, Moya waka hao kopani li lo tseo. So if na kelinga ka kisa moto konukeng engwe, but I sense that there's a disconnect,
mm-hmm.
then I can't then because there's a disconnect, continue with that process. Mm-hmm. But also what I'm saying is that sometimes resonance can be looked at from a very cognitive, logical perspective, mm-hmm. and then also from a spiritual perspective. Mm-hmm. But we shouldn't also discount the alchemy of those elements that maybe there might not be what I would identify as a spiritual resonance, but there's something that I can do to those waters mm-hmm. to enable your healing.
Okay.
Wabon. You know, so it becomes very complex because it's a case of, okay, so you're saying hore, there needs to be spiritual resonance, mm-hmm. but yet at the same time, you're saying hore, there could be a certain part of nature, a natural space, and an element that you can use because of its alchemic properties mm-hmm. that then can enhance that resonance.
How do you know when the space resonates with you?
Sure. Resonance is so different from other people. Not personally. Mm-hmm. When I know there's resonance is when either physically there's a response. Mm-hmm. Ne? Sometimes it's not just a physical response, it could be resonance in the things that happened prior to me getting there that affirm that this is where I need to go. Mm-hmm. Ne? Sometimes or oya somewhere, or shotaka chelete, ne? But you know that you need to go. Mm-hmm. And there you are kopansa. At that moment where you're like, I kopan into jiggy jiggy, oops, the money comes. So for me that's sort of an act of affirmation mm-hmm. that also contributes to resonance. Sometimes resonance then could be physically in how the messages come through to you before you even get there. A sense of peace, a sense of joy, and sense of joyful anticipation. You know, how you're feeling inside. You're not feeling anxious. And the anxiety is not linked to you looking at it from a mental perspective, but the anxiety is very deeply, it's in your gut, mm-hmm. you know? There's none of that. There's all of this feeling that you get. The nervousness is also joyful. So it also means that is an act of resonance, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So resonance to you could be hore, tatileleng hao tsoga, obona two doves that are passing by. And you know for yourself that when you see two doves, it means something. Or you step out of your house and you find a feather before Oya somewhere to an important meeting or to a space that you need to do whatever important ceremony, you find a feather and you know that that's how your people communicate with you to be able to affirm mm-hmm. a specific type of resonance. You know, mm-hmm. because you connect to mist, then it's very misty.
Yes.
It makes you feel peaceful.
Yes.
Then you know that whatever you're intending to, that is the universe saying to you that here's your affirmation in terms of resonance.
Okay. So, see, woke tina. You know?
Yeah.
See, a high can woke.
Yes.
But, see, you can intaba. You know? Sunday mornings, we pile up there in the different parks and the game reserves and the what reserves, you know?
Mm.
Going up the mountains, we are going into the rivers. Can spaces affect us without us knowing?
Oh, yes. I'll give you a practical example.
Mm-hmm.
Ne? I love going to Mapungubwe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I have a very strong affinity to Mapungubwe and all of those wonderful things. Ne? But Mapungubwe as a transfrontier park, it means that during apartheid, during the liberation struggles, those that were then the liberation fighters would then use it as a way to move into either Zimbabwe or Botswana.
Mm-hmm.
There's even an army barrack there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And so I get to Mapungubwe. It's all well and good. And I'm expecting great joyful resonance, give it more high and mm-hmm. all of those kind of things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I get it, that's what I'm expecting. I get it really sacred. I get it. So I'm coming in there and I want the sacredness.
You want the thunder, you
yes,
want the ground to shake.
I want the magic. I want the tada, you know? I want this. I love spiritual tadas. You know, spiritual tadas are my thing, you
yeah.
know? So I want the spiritual tada to happen. Something man must happen. Then I get there, but I'm disturbed by a certain energy.
Mm.
That I don't understand, that it's making me act some type of way.
Mm.
Ne? Only to find hore in that space, there are lingering spirits that were tortured in those army barracks that are still there. And what I was sensing is the energy, and I was unaware. you know. So I think the space can influence you completely, completely. Your level of connection to it will then be correlate with how unaware you are of it. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
So your connection to it, if you're deeply connected, you immediately feel it. But also if your focus is somewhere else, like I was, again, now I was focusing on the spiritual tadas. So this thing then took me by surprise. Because then I was like, what is this feeling? You can't be having these feelings, move the holy place, biang, you know? But then there was this whole story that's there that is also affecting me and how I'm acting and how I'm being in this supposed holy place, you know? So also it's about then, how do we make ourselves available spiritually to these spaces to be able to easily connect to whether those spaces are making us uncomfortable?
That's actually very important what you're saying, because I want to know, because I think the increase in hiking and whatever happened because of lockdown, because everything was closed and we couldn't go out, we couldn't go clubbing. We woke up, we were sober, we're not hungover, we had lots of energy, so we decided to go hike. How do we turn these physical activities, these hobbies of ours like hiking and going to the rivers, how do we turn them, for lack of a better word, spiritual?
I don't even think you can turn them, because they are. Potata has it, the place. Potata ke rona. Do you know what I mean? Like, we can't come there and be like, na spiritual, I know, to the place. You know? They're just who they are. You know? So if we're hiking in Groenkloof Nature Reserve, you know, the energy already is saying something to us. Rona, we then need to say, how do we meet it in order for it to be what we are saying, spiritual?
Would that translate into something like, because there's me and my friends, there's like 20, 30 of us, and we're walking, we're chatting, we come back. Does it translate into sort of taking moments, or even if you're an individual, Zamoliwane, and you know, specific moments or processes, or I don't want to say a ritual because the word scares a lot of people, but are there things that you can do for yourself to sort of enhance your spiritual experience of it?
You can't treat a natural space as ukare o tsena ka mogare ga tavern ya Makhumane. Also, so we bring in that mechanical state of being, and we are then invading that space with that energy, you know. Rata, hey, remunating, it's a picture. You're not even taking time to breathe. Do you remember when we got to Nzalo and Gogo said, take a moment to breathe in and release? Just that simple act of you getting into that space. You hike. Then you have a beautiful viewpoint that is Instagram ready. Instead of taking a picture, stand there, look at that view, and take a breath. It's as simple as just that. Sit at a particular spot, listen to the birds singing, listen to the sound of the stream, listen to whatever animals are moving through the grass and the grass is rustling. Connect to that. That is you being spiritual. You don't need to come there and do some, you know? So I get very, it works me up when people just barge into a natural space in Jay, you know? It's like coming into your home and then Batuma TV and then Baira volume loud. You know, you're not even giving yourself a chance to connect to the space, because our system has been panel beated to be mechanic so much that we even forget to be. We even forget for our hearts, ditsamaisana le the rhythm of the beat ya tlhago. our heartbeat and the beat of the sound of birds singing, it's misaligned, you know? Because we are so far removed from the because of the manner in which we live, you know? There's so many, we live in a very stressful environment to our spirit. It's abusive to our spirit the way that we live. So now you've got an opportunity to go out there with your 20 friends to go and hike, because now it's a part of a lifestyle that you've then assimilated into during lockdown. You are doing all of that now, you know. But it's a gift that this lockdown has given us, that God, Abadimbaru, Nabadimbaholo, Moyamoholo, whatever, has given us to say, we are actually then creating an opportunity for you to connect to self by going out in nature. Let's amailo hike. That is what spirituality is about. How do I go back and connect to the umbilical cord that then connects me to the divine? Because that's what nature is. Mm. So take your time to settle your spirit into that space. You don't need to be a meditation guru to do that also, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
If I don't know where my grandparents come from, if I don't know anyone, does that mean that I'm spiritually disconnected?
Beyond when we're spirit beings. Hmm? Maybe it's a nata batsadi anchoring. What do you want? Maybe it's a little bit of a villa, my two a flat. But it doesn't mean how koloi. You know? It doesn't mean more how koloi. And the thing is, even if Haritzi boko kolibora kolobaron. Gidis Fanisa Agar.
Yes.
Fanisa Agar is linked to a totem, Agar. It's linked to a clan, Agar. So once I start to understand that kind of identity and then see how do I then connect with that. Mm-hmm. If Gidis Horoko Hai, Kortangote, Agitsu Kokulera, Kulba Natao, how do I then channel that energy of those people? You know, and that's why it goes back to the spiritual functions of the sacred sites. If at the very least, through the little clues that I have, understand this, that spiritual function, it then brings me closer to understanding.
Okay. Is there a spiritual hierarchy in terms of ancestral homes? In that they will say if umsebenzi has to be done at your grandmother's house, or they would say it has to be done at your grandfather's house, or it will be done at your uncle's house, you know, because there are all of these different scenarios for people, especially in urban areas, where, because if there was a rural area, it would be easy enough to say this has to be done. But now we come from the townships, you know. My father comes from that place, my mother comes from that place, my grandparents also come from an urban area, and then there's this constant debate about where must something be done, and which one has more spiritual value than the other. Are these factors important?
It's not about value, it's about role.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about the role. Kharira mmereko, mmereko o kiwa eng. And then, who are the people that are living, the people that have transcended, that needs to hold space from a role perspective for that to be as effective as possible? Wabon? Because sometimes, batho ba tla re no, o tshwanetse gore o ire mmereko ko rakgadi wa gago. You know, Rakhari le Malume, the reason why they've got specific roles in our cultures is because they've also got a spiritual mandate. So it's not about enhancing the value of the experience of miracle. It's about the fact that they've got a spiritual mandate in terms of their role, more family. You know? If there is a person who's supposed to be the grand matriarch, that person is then the nurturer, you know, the protector of life and all of that. If there's a specific miracle that needs to happen, you're more than likely to bring the person who has put everybody, who is oputile mbatho ba botlhe mo family. And usually then it'll be koko.
Yes, I get generally, yeah.
It'll be koko. Because we need that role ya go putha batho within that ceremony.
Does this extend into
For example, I'm a person, I was abandoned by my father, right? My father had no role in my life whatsoever.
Mm.
And then at some point in my life, things are not progressing the way I go consult Koko Uti. No, you need to go uyenze umsebenzi kababako. Can I refuse based on my personal experience of my father to say that that place then holds no spiritual significance to me?
You know, I think often when there's a message, and also if that message is genuine, because I get a little runa, sometimes we impose certain messages based on a curriculum, I get.
Okay.
And when I say runa, I mean us as healers.
Yes.
Yeah? So if that message comes from a place of spirit, more often than not, those that have transported that message to whoever is the carrier who then gives it to you, understand that you will see so much value from that act itself.
Mm-hmm.
You are looking at it from a point, yanama.
Yes, I'm hurt.
Yes. He's a deadbeat dad or absent, ibile naho denier and all of that, you know. First of all, they'll say you need to do it because they understand there's going to be a facilitation for you for that thing to happen, you know. Because a lot of people will come and ask me, but those people habang, they don't care about me, you know, that side of my family, and I doubt they'll agree. There's no ways that if the message is spirit-led, that there won't be a facilitation for that thing to happen, number one. Number two is that we need to be able to trust them enough to know what they want the best for us. Irrespective of how we feel. It's not some punitive group of people there. They've got nothing to do there in the spiritual realm but to punish you, to go and deal with your dad who hates you or who's a deadbeat dad or who's absent. It's not part of their business, that thing. They know what it's going to be the best for you. And they know what lefatshe leo, lo tshwantse o ireng kolone, there's something that it carries for you to then find greater purpose mo bophelong ba gago. The only issues that we then struggle with as our human self and our emotions, that yes, says, now I must go and do this for someone who hasn't shown me any love. Hmm? I must now still go and beg that guy who doesn't even identify me as their child to get someone within their family or himself to do then this ceremony. So I think if we understand that spirit comes from a point of love, you know, and that's where we need to change the language of how we talk about spirit. Because a lot of it is about, it's very punitive and it's also very transactional, you know? So then what happens? We start to treat it as a transactional relationship. Because you know? So then we're not understanding the represent a unity, kipedi, munna musadi also represents two different sides coming together. It's about how then do I unify myself? How do I find anchoring within myself? And that's why they want that. And because of that, I will open up opportunities for me ho kira mosebetsi. So has a magic ele ya gore dira bana o tla bona ka moso o tlo kira mosebetsi. Because then we have to change that language. You know, we are saying gore wa ditukisetsa the opportunities for you to get what is meant for you. Wabona? But if we start to say hore no how ka ira bana o tlo kira mosebetsi o ba sa o kira mosebetsi yo when you are expecting o kira mosebetsi or ke mosebetsi o leng gore a o nyake, you then going to lose the essence of what this whole process is about. So it's probably also in how we then translate and then give the message, you know, because it causes a lot of anxiety for people. Hore ya na gotile I must do this and you know, I'm feeling some type of way, is to first understand that it comes from a point of love.
Earlier on, you mentioned something that caught my attention. You were talking about land and rain and fertility. I've always wondered, does land spiritual, does land symbolize something different for women?
Yeah, I think it does, you know. There was a time, there was a whole conversation about the divine feminine, and I was explaining it. It was some discussion we were having about how women were generally the custodians of land. So khale, women would be the ones baba khona who decide gore go mediwa eng mo lefatseng, ne? And
as in the planting phase.
Yes, yes. And so while the men would go out hunting and whatever else, the women would be left to take care of the land, ne? And because lefatsi is a place that is reproductive and it's creative, a lot of the divine feminine energy is reproductive and it's creative. So it makes sense that women who then channel a lot of that divine feminine energy, not to say men in the physical gender sense don't, that they would then be the custodians of that aspect of nature that then represents creativity and nurturing and a reproductive cyclic process. So I do feel that on some level there's a deep connection that runa basadi, especially because retsamisa na le dikgwedi tsa
you're linked to the cycles. Yes.
So already we're linked to the cycles of nature by just who we are, you know,
mm-hmm.
That much more deeply, because the cycle of nature then it duplicates ourselves even in our physical reproductive system.
Mm-hmm.
And then energetically then our connection lingwedi. Ngwedi is a feminine energy, is a nurturing energy and all of that. So I do feel that those people had something going when they were in matrilineal or matriarchal societies. They were then putting the women as the custodians of land because they understood what batho itlokomela. Because they are natural nurturers.
Mm.
Yeah.
Tobela koko.
Tobela. So I need to talk about this Nzilikazi thing. Why? I don't know.
Okay.
Please, can we talk about it?
Let's talk about Nzilikazi and the custodians.
Yes. So, you know, earlier on we were talking about how some groupings will then connect to a sacred site because of their function. And what has happened over time is that other groupings would come and then take over that space in order to try and harness the power of that function.
Mm-hmm.
So if you give an example of that, you would see how Mzilikazi moved from KwaZulu-Natal and then moved all the way through what was then the Transvaal or whatever. Ebe ajiga are right through then kubakhahlale bafukeng ba nna ngoteng and then abaya towards the north to Bulawayo, what he now called Bulawayo.
Mm.
And what I was trying to say about the displacement of land and the displacement of people from their sacred sites is that it didn't happen only with colonialism.
Mm.
That there was a deliberate displacement of people from those sacred sites by even us ourselves,
mm.
because we wanted to harness that power.
Mm.
So there is a reason why Mzilikazi then chose to go to place his headquarters at Matopo Hills, which is a sacred site for the Kalangas, for example, you know?
Mm.
So they understand the spiritual significance of that place where then the rites of passages happened, where the initiations happened, where the portals and the vortexes of whatever it is that they need to connect to spiritually happened. They understand that spiritual significance. So through his assimilation of the people that were the custodians of that, why would he want that particular land,
mm.
is because he understood the significance and how he wanted to then manipulate the significance of it for himself. He's buried there,
mm.
but he's not necessarily then the custodian in terms of the function of the group and the collective. Now, what is interesting is that Cecil John Rhodes is also buried there at a sacred site for the people that they found there that were the custodians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's also to recognize that, yes, we had the Native Land Act of 1913, which displaced people and moved them from very agriculturally fertile lands to put them in spaces where they can't sustain for themselves or fend for themselves. But those people didn't do it just for that. They did it deliberately to make sure that we are disconnected from places that gives us spiritual health. Wabon. But that didn't start, my point is that didn't start with the colonizers. The colonizers just did it more, sophisticatingly. But a lot of these acts, you know, that they then created to try and usurp all these beautiful spaces.
All the sacred spaces are on private land.
And all these sacred spaces are on private land, except for the fact that the one thing that they did that is to our advantage now is that the Protected Areas Act that then find spaces of land that they used to conserve either the fauna or the flora of that place. The 21 national parks that we have where I work is that it has given us an opportunity to also then preserve the sacred sites that are in that land. Now, what we need to do is make sure that for sustainability's sake, we have people that can have access to those sacred sites. So now we're also dealing with how do we then deal with those people that were taken from those places? Because around those parks, we've got a lot of land claims, again. So go Kruger National Park, there's places that we have identified that belong to a specific clan that live there. Tulamela, only 5 clans that can have a linkage to Tulamela, and that is recognized. And Batobao, Bakono Batanakamu Krug, Bayoko Tulamela, Bilo Pasela, Batobaholo Babon. So now what we are called to do is that those protected areas that through apartheid, those laws were created in order for Batu. Bahode all these sacred places so that we are also disconnected from it. Now it's working to our advantage because inadvertently they have then preserved those for us. So that means the correct custodians, our mandate now is to make sure that the correct custodians are the one that can continue to have access to that so that we can try and restore some sort of cosmic order as a consequence.
The British Museum has only ever displayed only 10% of the African artifacts that it has. And I've been wondering why, and I think you've answered my question. That I was like, those things are of no value to you as British people. Those artifacts. And you are only showing 10% of them. Every 90% is hidden away. But what is it to you? It's just a piece of wood. It's just a piece of this. What is it to you? And if you're not displaying it, clearly you don't have use for it. But you are taking the time and the effort to keep it and maintain it and keep it far away from people. Because a lot of countries want their things back. But the museum saying, no, can't give it to you. And I'm like, why? I would understand if you're displaying it because you're saying you're educating people, this is history, but you don't even want anyone to see it.
They know its power to the original owners. They know its spiritual power. 10% de eo. Ke the 10% e tlhokagalang. So the Drum of Thunder in Gomalungudu. Maybe it's in some Western museum somewhere because they understand its power. Ne? That's why it's still there displayed.
And then there are the ones they don't want anyone to see. The rest of the 90% of the artifacts that they don't want anyone what to do see.
Yes. You know? And even in those 90%, one of those things that they know the spiritual significance of it. They know. Do you know in Mapungubwe, you know how these people like to think that they've discovered things that have already existed for years. So the story, it's always from a point of discovery, which irritates me. The fact that now a historical story of a landmark or a historical landmark or heritage site has to start from someone discovering it as if it never existed. So it's good that we're also then starting to change that narrative with some of the work that I do, to change that narrative. Or no, the story of this place doesn't start from Mamang discovering it. But with Mapungubwe, they got archaeologists at the University of Pretoria to come and do then some archaeological digging, and then they found then the golden rhino, the rod and the scepter. Do you know those things were kept for decades in some back storeroom somewhere in the University of Pretoria? Why? Because they didn't want people to know that there were black people that actually knew how to mine way before the gold mine rush. They didn't want people to know that there were black people that had a very sophisticated civilization that also dealt with social status and hierarchy and whatever that was in existence 1,000 years ago. They didn't want us to know that. They kept those things there, you know, in some back office gathering dust, because it wouldn't have been to their benefit for people to know that.
The issue of land is one that lays quite clearly and very blatantly what it is that we as Africans have lost as a result of colonization. When the land was taken, it was almost as though our very soul was ripped out from inside of us. Hundreds of years later, we haven't recovered. Hundreds of years later, some of the most important and beautiful features of our land are all on private property. You have individuals who own entire mountains and forests and rivers, while black people are packed tightly in townships and squatter camps. Most black people have a very poor grasp of how land and spirituality relate to one another, and that is really by design. In the past few years, the call to get the land back has been little more than a social media hashtag pushed by people who believe in simplistic solutions. And personally, I don't really know what will happen if we got the land back, because we are so stuck on survival mode that I struggle to imagine how we are going to come up with solutions of how to use it adequately. And this is not to say that we won't. We will. But right now, we are really, really in a bad way. But that being said, life is about adapting. And this is one thing that Africans have always been really, really good at. And we as a generation are going through a process of evolution. I believe that if we begin to center ourselves in our beliefs, to really, really root ourselves in a thorough understanding of our spirituality, it will be easier for us to then utilize whatever form of land that we have access to and to deepen our connection with the divine. It's important to remember that spirituality is not what comes from the outside and into you, but it is about what comes from you and connects with the world. I was so extremely touched when Gogo spoke about the importance of resonance, and in many ways it connected so many dots for me. In our social media driven pursuit to understand spirituality, we tend to force ourselves to want to have the same experiences as other people. We want to sink our bodies in gorgeous clear water rivers and meditate in ancient forests and mountains with the hope that in the end we'll have some kind of supernatural experience and we will leave there enlightened and dripping with profound abilities like superpowers. I think it would be amazing and extremely helpful if each of one of us took time to figure out what kind of spaces truly resonate with us. What kind of spaces do you really, really connect to? This is not to say this process won't be challenging. I mean, how many of us even know what spiritual resonance even feels like? And that, fam, that question is why this process is called a journey. You won't know what you resonate with until you go to that place. And you won't know if you are resonating with a space until you go within yourself. If you carry resonance within yourself, any place that you set your foot on becomes a sacred space. Ultimately, you are your own primary connector to the spiritual realm. You have existed before any planet took shape, and you will be one with the all once the universe has returned to where it came from. You are the land in which an intergalactic golden soul has found a home in. My name is Vusom Zinglandi, and I want to sincerely thank you for taking the time to listen to yet another episode of The Journey Kwantu. I wish you courage, I wish you light, and I wish you all the very best on your journey. Makwande.